So just a quick recap of where we are again. So remember, we're in towards the end of Old Testament history, right here in the return. So after the nation had been exiled into Babylon and Persia through their unbelief, their unfaithfulness to God, we're back into the promised land, but there's lots of work to do, lots of rebuilding. Of course, God said he'd always promised that he would bring back a remnant. In Isaiah chapter 10, verse 21, a remnant will return, a remnant of Jacob. Jacob, of course, is the former name for Israel. Jacob's name became Israel, a remnant of Jacob to the mighty God. So God promised that he would preserve a remnant. Remember, we talked about the fact that a remnant is not the dregs, it's not the things that no one wants, it's the refined gold. When everything else has been burnt away, it's the bit that remains, what you're looking for. That's what a remnant is. That's what the Christians are today. We're that surviving remnant. And Ezra and Nehemiah, as we go through it, we'll see is a book about return, rebuild, and reform. And of course, we're starting to see some rebuilding now. The return, certainly the first phase of the return, has happened. And now we're looking at rebuilding. They're starting to build their life up again. And if you were to ask the other nations, what makes this group of people belong to God? I wonder what you thought they might say. I mean, what is it that separates this group of people from the nations around them, even the people that are living in their land now? What actually, why did God bring them back? And of course, that is to worship him, to have a nation, a community where their whole lives are dedicated to God in praise, so they could show the rest of the world God's goodness. And of course, as they've been exiled, they've not had the means to do that. They've not had a temple, a location for them to show their gratitude to God. And hence, they're back in the nation. Now they need to rebuild what makes them that people of God. There's lots of rebuilding they need to do. Because when you build, you always need to start with foundations. Foundations are absolutely critical for building anything. And this is a building project. You can't put the walls straight onto the ground. You can't start with the walls. And you certainly can't start with the roof if you've got no walls to put it on. You start with the foundations first and foremost. And what we're going to see is that when you go through a building project, there's an order and a priority to do things. And this is what this little section is all about here. The priority of this group of people rebuilding their life back in this land. But it always starts with foundations. Let's see the importance of foundations. Girls, you want to come up here? Foundations are vital. Actually, it's because foundations are what keep things strong when all sorts of things happen. Right? Who wants to blow their head right? Okay. There's our nice building. Okay, a bit like a cross between the shower and the gherkin. Blow the hair dry. What's happened? What happens to our building? Okay, good. Oh, okay. That is no use. That is a building without foundations. So, right, Lucy, you're going to be the foundations. You're hiding around there. So what I want to do is just grab it there. Okay? That's what, on the ground, that's what foundations do. Foundations, let's read it up. Foundations grip a building to the ground. That's what happened. Let's read it to you. Thank you. Great. Nice example of foundations. That's how important foundations are. That's literally what's happening here. They're building foundations to grip their life, so when things come against them, they won't stumble. But, as we're going to see, they need to rebuild their lives back in this land by priority. And what we're going to see is they actually need deeper foundations than merely ones that are just for a building. This is a building project, yes, and they've come back to build the temple and their houses. But of course, first and foremost, they need to rebuild their relationship with God. There's no point building a temple for them to worship a God in that they have no knowledge of or no relationship with. There's no point going to a temple to worship a God that a God doesn't know them. It's the whole reason they were exiled in the first place is because they broke their relationship with God through unfaithfulness to him. Their relationship, as we say, this is all about foundations. Their relationship is not with the temple, but with God. And in God's grace and his mercy, they've given them another chance to rebuild that relationship with him. So what we're going to see here, we're going to see there's two sets of foundations that get built here. Two sets of foundations. There's an internal foundation, is what they start with. And we're going to see there's an external, a physical foundation. But they have to prioritize the order of these. So we're going to look at the internal foundation first. The internal foundation is that spiritual relationship that they have with God. It's not a physical foundation. They're not physically building this. This is something that gets built internally into them. If the people want to come back and live under God's rule with his blessing, then they need to get right with God. That's the internal foundation that they're building first. That's got to come first before anything else. They have got to get right with God. Rebuild that relationship with God. The definition of them being a people is the fact that they have a relationship with God. And for each person, that's the requirement. Let's pick up from verse 1. When the seventh month came, and the Israelites had settled in the towns, the people assembled together as one in Jerusalem. Then Joshua, son of Jozadak, and his fellow priests, and Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, and his associates began to build what? The temple? The city walls? Began to build the altar of the God of Israel, to sacrifice burnt offerings on it in accordance with what is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. Despite the fear of the peoples around them, they built the altar on its foundation and sacrificed burnt offerings on it to the Lord, both the morning and the evening sacrifices. So what verse 3 is quite clear. See, there's fear among the people of the other groups of people and nations that have occupied the lands since they've been away. There's fear. And the temptation for the people is to come back and just to fortify themselves. Let's protect ourselves with stone and mortar. We'll fortify. This is what Jerusalem used to look like. It was a walled city. They could have started there. Or they could have said, right, well, we need an extravagant temple. That's what defines us. That's what separates us from the people, the rest of the world, is our fantastic temple. But they're rebuilding their lives. And what they need to do first, what they need to prioritize first, is their relationship with God. And the altar is how they do that. The altar, when they make the sacrifices, they were saying to God, we are sorry for turning our backs on you. And God would accept what dies on the altar to atone for them, to take their sin away in an external way, and they would be right with God in that moment. And that's why they chose the seventh month, verse 1, the seventh month. This was the month of atonement. Remember, we looked at this when we went through Leviticus. The month of atonement. This is when the whole nation was atoned for in the sacrifices. And here they are doing it as prescribed by the law of Moses. End of verse 2. And what you have is you have Zerubbabel, who is the descendant of David. So you have the Davidic king there. And Joshua, who's from the priestly line. You have the Davidic king and the high priest. And they're doing it properly. They're making themselves right with God. We saw all these sacrifices they did in Leviticus. This is what they're doing now. This is how they're rebuilding that relationship. Remember, these sacrifices are an external ritual that's designed to prompt an inner change in the people. They're meant to look at that huge bull burning on that altar. They're meant to look at that and think, that should have been me. My sin means I deserve to die like that, but that bull has taken my place, and God is accepting that. They want to re-establish themselves in the promised land. They need to first get right with God. They need to mend that relationship with God, first and foremost. That's the internal foundations. Internal foundations first. Get right with God. And now, as we've seen, now they've done that, they can move on to these physical foundations, the second ones, the actual real foundations in the ground. And now they start to get to work on the temple foundations. So they've built the altar. They've done that. They've got right with God. They've restored that relationship so far. We'll see that's going to go sour again. But they need to continue working at that relationship. It's not just a one-off thing. They need to keep meeting with God to maintain that relationship. And so they need a place to do that. They need to keep meeting with God. Once you've been made right with God, you need to keep meeting with God. Otherwise, you lose touch. You don't know them. How many of you can remember some of the people that you rode the bus to at school? Are you still in touch with everyone on your school bus or everyone in your school year? We're not. I don't think any of us are, are we? When you don't meet regularly with someone, you lose touch. That relationship dies away. You don't have a relationship with someone you don't meet with or you don't know. As Christians, we keep meeting. These people need to keep meeting with God. And that's where they start laying the foundations for this temple. This is the place where they build that relationship with God. Verse 10. When the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests in their vestments and with trumpets, and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals, took their places to praise the Lord as prescribed by King David, King of Israel. Verse 11, with praise and thanksgiving, they sang to the Lord. He is good. His love toward Israel endures forever. And all the people gave a great shout of praise to the Lord because the foundations of the house of the Lord were made. But later, this great scene here, this is all the priests in their vestments and the trumpets. They've just laid foundations. That's all they've got. They haven't got a building to meet in, but they've made themselves right with God, and now they're building a place to meet with God. This is a great moment of joy, huge celebration here. All the people are there. I love that section, right at the end of verse 11. And all the people gave a great shout of praise. All the people, because all the people have invested themselves into it heavily. You see that in verse 7. All the people gave money to the masons and the carpenters and gave food and drink and olive oil to the people of Sidon and Tyre so that they would bring cedar logs by the sea from Lebanon to Joppa as authorized by Cyrus, king of Persia. They've all invested themselves into this heavily. They want this temple to be built because they want somewhere to meet God. Because they want to cultivate, they want to keep building up that relationship with God. They all understand the importance of meeting with him and maintaining a right relationship with him. Because the people have come back as a group and they've sacrificed as a group and they want to meet as a group of people with the Lord regularly. And boy, are they celebrating it. And they're celebrating because they've all invested themselves heavily into this. It's very hard to picture what that looks like now. Often the most similar thing that you can think of is football fans. Football fans invest themselves into the club in ways that we would not normally do. These are Newcastle fans. This is them in London a few weeks ago. Over 30,000 descended into Trafalgar Square. This is the day before the game, the final. 30,000. The North East is one of the poorest areas in the whole of Britain, yet they're happy to invest their time, their money, their efforts to do that. 16,000 went to Milan. 16,000, including yours truly, flew to Milan at great cost. This is when young, free and single, and you had money. Annoyingly, I'm just about there with my dad and my brother, just off picture. 16,000 flying to Milan, pay for a hotel and the match ticket. You'd only do that if you were committed, invested in it. And trust me, when they score, it is great celebrations. It's a time of joy. But I wouldn't do that now. I wouldn't do that now because my time, my efforts, my money invested into something different, something bigger, something more important. But that's the sort of commitment that the people are showing here. They're willing to fly and travel miles and to build from the ground up. They're invested in church, in their temple, in building and maintaining that relationship with God. That's the sort of desire we want to cultivate here. That's why church is a place to grow as a whole community closer to God. But we must be right with God individually first. Of course, it's not just football fans. If you're obsessed with Barbies, you're going to invest loads of money into it. This isn't wallpaper. These are individual Barbies in their boxes. If you're obsessed with something, if you want to invest your whole life into something, it would look like that. That's what we want to do with church. There's a huge moment of celebration this for the people, given the 70 years of exile when they've not been able to do any of this. But, verse 12, but we see not everyone is so happy, are they? Verse 12, but many of the older priests and the Levites and family heads who had seen the former temple wept aloud when they saw the foundation of this temple being laid, while many others shouted for joy. So you've got many who are shouting for joy, seeing this as a great moment, but also many are weeping. And this isn't weeping for joy, they're weeping. Why are they weeping? Well, the prophet Haggai, so Haggai overlaps with Ezra and Nehemiah. Haggai gives us a little insight into that. Haggai chapter 2, verse 3. He writes, "Who of you is left who saw this house in its former glory, i.e. before the exile? How does it look to you now? Does it not seem to you like nothing?" So Haggai is confronting those who are weeping, those who are moaning that, well, this temple doesn't look like the one we had before. That's why they're weeping. The new temple, this is a rough, similar sort of size. This is the new one getting built. And here's an approximate size of what the old one was. So if you were familiar with this old one, you might look at the new one and think, this is nothing. Our new church is nothing compared to what we had before. They'll be thinking, this isn't going to work. This highlights our application. The application here is to manage expectations. When we're building our internal foundation, when we get right with God, and then we start building a place to meet with Him regularly, we need to manage our expectations, manage what we think will happen as a result from all that. The ones weeping aloud here in verse 12, they're the ones with unrealistic expectations. They thought, well, we're going to go straight back into the land, build this fortified, safe city like we had before, this huge, extravagant temple, and we'll probably do it in that order. And we'll just get back to what we had before, because they think God's blessings come through the temple and their fortified city. But God's blessings were conditional on the people being faithful to Him. Not on the size of their building or on how well protected they were physically. And the fact that the size of the building, the foundations of the new temple, were causing some to weep, showed that they hadn't built proper internal foundations. And to manage their expectations of life back in the promised land, they need to get right with God properly. They need to mend that relationship properly. Get that relationship right, and your expectations of what will life will look like after that will be realistic. Because really, their only source of joy should be the fact that God has brought them back in the first place. The fact they've got any foundations at all is a bonus. The fact that they've been brought back alone in God's grace is enough for them to celebrate. That's what they should be celebrating. And that's why expectations of life as a Christian have to come from our relationship with Jesus first and foremost. If our expectations come from secondary things, then we'll be sorely, sorely disappointed. Think of it this way. So imagine, well, today's the London Marathon. Imagine if you spent a year trying to get yourself into shape to run the London Marathon. You think, right, I'm going to join a gym. The gym is going to sort me out. All I need to do is go to that gym and I'm going to be in tip-top shape. So on the way to the gym, you get yourself a nice McDonald's breakfast, as you would. And from McDonald's to the gym, it's a 5-minute walk. So you've got time for maybe 10 fags. So you have 10 fags on the way. You go to the gym, and on your way home, you pass KFC and you pop in. You get a nice KFC on the way home. And then when you get home, you drink an enormous glass of beer. That effectively is what they're doing here. They're thinking, if you're approaching the gym like that, you're expecting miracles from a gym. You think, all I need to do is go to the gym and I don't need to bother about the rest of my life. I can just live how I want, eat what I want, drink what I want, and the gym will sort me out. And quite often, really, instead of going to the gym, you're probably just going to the cafe in the gym. I don't need to do anything. The gym will sort me out. Unfortunately, that's how many people, certainly in this country, view church today. They think, I don't need to change my life or anything. Church will sort that out. And church becomes this enormous thing that we hold on a pedestal. And people think church is just a place for social action and charity work and just a refuge for the homeless. And they think, well, I'll go to church every week because if I go to church, then for some reason, miracles are going to happen. My life will be completely transformed. But we want to build that relationship with God first. We want those internal foundations before we start looking at the physical foundations of what church will look like. Just like people going to the gym expecting miracles, lots of people go to church and think, well, church will sort my life out. And the problem is that when a church is just a place for charitable work, it's not making disciples. It's not laying any internal foundations in people. That's why our application is that we need to manage our expectations of what church does for us. Well, church is the place to grow our relationship with God. Church is not our relationship with God. We have an individual relationship with God. For the church to work properly, we must get right with God individually. We start that first, we work on that first, and then church works secondary to that. Just like if we want to get ourselves into great shape by going to the gym, we sort our lifestyle out first. Only then does the gym work. For church to work, we must be right with God individually. And we manage our expectations of what our life will look like as Christians by getting our internal foundations right, being in the right relationship with God through Jesus. Because God's blessings to us are not physical like it was for these people back in the land of protection and crops. God's blessings to us are spiritual. They're internal, not external. The blessings we receive through Jesus are salvation and wisdom and hope and joy. And that joy comes from being in a right relationship with God in Jesus. Because Jesus is the one who makes that relationship right forever, especially when we don't deserve it. And the church, therefore, the church becomes that place where we invest that joy. Just like the people here, they invested everything they had into building that church. We invest our whole lives through that joy we have of knowing Jesus into church. That's where the real joy of meeting comes from. A group of people who are right with God, meeting together to praise God because of that right relationship we have with Him. And we see that. We saw yesterday was a great example of how we can all meet together and share joy. Our fellowship lunches, even we just meet every Sunday, is a time of joy because we've invested in that relationship with Jesus first. That makes time at church a joy. Just like going to the gym. We want the gym to work. We invest in our lifestyle for the gym to work. For church to work, we get right with God and then we meet as a group of people who are right with God. That's the joy. The blessings come through that. Church only works when our internal foundations are laid properly. And boy, do we need strong internal foundations. Because just like the people here, verse 3, despite their fear of the peoples around them, they built the altar on its foundations. And we're going to see as we go through this book, there's going to be lots of opposition coming their way. Lots of it. We need strong foundations to resist the opposition that comes our way. The opposition that tells us it's not worth going to church. Let's have a look at something. Do you want to come up here, girls? Let's see what sort of things are going to be thrown against our internal foundations. There's not going to be wind, is it? The wind is not going to blow us, of course. Come around here, girls. Come around here. So here's our building. You can both grab it now, because we've got... Come around this side so people can see. So the building, that represents our relationship with Jesus. So both grab it. So firm foundations. There's going to be lots of things that oppose, that try to stop us from coming to church to build on those foundations. Things like magazines. Magazines will tell you, you don't need church. What you need to do is you need to buy this, live here, or go and do that. You don't need church or Jesus, and that will be thrown at it. But because you've got strong foundations in Jesus, that doesn't budge them. Or our health. Our health, lots of times we'll be in poor health and we'll think, I just can't face church today. I don't fancy it. I'm too tired. I'm too tired to walk with Jesus. My condition is so debilitating. All those things are opposition to us, but we've got strong foundations in Jesus. It doesn't knock it over. And social media or the internet. Every day that would be telling us, why are you going to church? What are you, a sissy? Is this church a crutch for you? I'm too strong. I don't need church. I don't need Jesus. You're a bigot if you go to church. An outcast. A cultural outcast. Who wants to be a cultural outcast? Those are the things that get thrown at you. But those foundations in Jesus are strong. What about money? Think how much more money we'd be able to earn if we worked 7 days a week. There's no room for church in that. But a strong foundation in Jesus means nothing will knock us over. Let me go over that. Strong, eternal foundations. Build that relationship with Jesus. Get that right first, and it will manage our expectations of what life as a Christ follower looks like. And boy, do we need strong foundations. But the reality is, in Jesus, our foundations couldn't be any stronger or firmer. Let me pray.